Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience. Coming at you from the back of an 86 Dodge Ram van on the rolling foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the great forest, deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. Before we get into the meat of the episode, I wanted to take a second to remind you that the Nightbird Radio Podcast is fully supported through contributions and donations from listeners. There are no ads, there's no monetization here currently. In the future, that might change. We'll have to see what comes. But for now, this podcast is fully supported through listeners like you. And this podcast does cost money. It does take time. It does take energy. And so I'm asking, if you get anything out of this podcast, if you enjoy it, if it makes your day better, if it helps you on your journey, that you take a second to go to nightbirdpodcast.com, hit the donate button, go to the donate link, and turn that value that you've gotten out of this podcast into a number. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. This week, I'm joined by Dr. Joanna Cuyava. Joanna is a seeker, a scholar, a spiritual detective, and the author of The Other Goddess, Mary Magdalene and the Goddesses of Eros and Secret Knowledge. She's also a returning guest. I'm very excited to have her back on. Dr. Cuyava, how are you doing today?
I am doing very well. Thank you, Tim, and thank you for having me back on your show and for this wonderful introduction. And I love your general intro to your radio.
Fantastic. Oh, thank you. Cheers. Yeah, I like the energy it kind of brings. I used to add it at the end, and I'm like, I need to just do it on the show because it gets us in
the zone,
you know?
Yeah.
So real quick, you know, you've been on here before and we had a great conversation about your book. Do you want to just give the listeners real quick, like where they can find your work, where they can find you online, just so that we can get that out of the way and get to the good stuff?
Okay. So you can find me mostly through my book, The Other Goddess, which is mostly about Mary Magdalene, but also other goddesses, Isis and so on, the goddesses of Eros and secret knowledge, when I kind of look into connections between sexuality and spirituality, and the archetype of a goddess that has been forgotten. Because, you know, when we speak about the goddess, we usually think about the mother goddess, and it was kind of my rebellion almost against this particular paradigm. So the best way to connect with me is basically from my book. It's on Amazon.com. I also have my own webpage, which is my first name, my last name, Joanna Cuyava, Cuyawa.com. I have a small YouTube channel, and, you know, I'm giving lots of interviews about that book, The Other Goddess, and also the book in progress, which is really about the goddess consciousness, UFOs, and AIs. It's an interesting kind of passage from one to another, but they're actually very deeply connected.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really was excited to talk about, because I think that there is such a connection. And when I first started hearing about this connection, it really sort of blew my mind. But before we get into that, and like we were talking about before, this might lead into some of that. I want to ask you, Dr. Cuyava, what were you afraid of as a child?
Well, so what I was afraid of, and actually what I'm kind of still afraid of, but it takes, you know, I'm working on it now because I'm a big girl now. I was afraid of doctors and hospitals. And it kind of brought this fear back when I started to write a book about, especially the part of the book about UFOs, because, of course, it has a lot to do with the strange fear, right? Beings messing up with you.
Yeah, being poked and prodded, being the lights remind me of experiencers' descriptions of a UFO too, like the lights of a hospital, that sort of hum that is going on in a hospital, like the electromagnetic sterile hum.
It's interesting. So first of all, because, you know, I would like to, if you want me to jump into this fear and how it plays out in the book, that's
Yeah.
fine. But I just want to say, because this question often pops up in interviews now that I started to do about the upcoming book, it is that I do believe that there are also UFOs or UAPs that are probably like extraterrestrial visitations. At the same time, my focus in my book and in my research is on this other school of thought that they are basically a multidimensional beings, more likely. And so I'm more in the school of thought of Jacques Vallée, Diana Pasuka, and Jeff Crippel, and so on, when I think our reality is so much richer and we are ignoring it. And yes, spaceships can visit us, and in fact, if there are advanced civilizations, which I'm sure they are, they probably would have better ways of visiting us than, just through quite crude technology, which has to do with mechanics. And they would probably contact us through our consciousness.
Yes.
So I just want to set this, parameters of this discussion, because of course you can talk about UAPs or UFOs, in so many ways. So that is more of my focus.
Yeah, I'm with you on that
No,
as well. Oh, something strange just happened to the audio. Did you hear that? That was wild. Okay.
all good here.
I was gonna say it was probably just some extraterrestrial intelligences.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with you on that. I'm of the Jacques Vallée camp too, and I love Dr. Pasulka's work as well. I'm really interested because, okay, this is one of the things that actually reminded me of when I saw that you were covering this topic now, that this is what you were researching, because it reminded me of when I, read her book American Cosmic. The connection that she makes, because she, she was at first researching like souls in purgatory and like that, those experiences. Like, there were many accounts of people ex having experiences of souls in purgatory that were like a lot like extraterrestrial or alien, whatever you want to call them, encounters. And that's what kind of led her there. And then so I hear about you kind of having this also, this through line of from spirituality to, and I think it's all spirituality, right? Because right, but we always think about nuts and bolts.
That's right, and this is not my way of thinking. So just people, that's why I did this caveat that basically I do believe that it is possible, and I'm not saying it's all multidimensional spiritual, but I am not focusing on this. I'm
Right.
focusing on that, and I'm this other school of thought. And it's very good of you that you mentioned Diana Pasuka, because she's extremely influential in my life. So, for example, American Cosmic changed my thinking about UFOs, because personally I did not have an experience of a UFO, like that spaceship has landed and I saw something. That was not my experience. But when she framed it in terms of spiritual experiences and how some people experience the same event as spiritual and others, or like angelic, and others as experiences as UAP or UFOs, when I thought, oh my goodness, I had them all my life.
Yeah,
Okay, so then
right.
it redefined my thinking, because no, I didn't, I was not at crash landing, I didn't see this, like a spaceship, but I had anomalous, what would go probably under anomalous experiences that go into the same category. So I perhaps will give you experience, first of all, from her book that you probably remember, her book American Cosmic, because we can talk about her second book, Encounters, as well. So when she talks about, I think, Tyler D, when, no, it's actually not about Tyler D. She's talking about this family, a woman and a man that have a sick dog. And the woman who is Catholic, she's his wife, she's praying, for the sick dog to recover. And then she goes into the living room, down the stairs to the living room, and she sees angels, and the dog is actually cured. When her husband, on the other hand, didn't see angels, he saw like electric orbs
Yeah, okay. I'm really interested in this.
instead. And then, he also has all of his UFO kind of abduction experiences, such as like he lost the sense of time, and also he was kind of passive, which, my experiences are similar to the whole thing. And only after the event is just like, oh my God, what just happened? Which is exactly my experience as well. So when I was reading specifically this example, I was thinking, yes, And that's why I think that this is where the genius of Diana Pasulka lies, that she made this connection, because both of us have a religious studies background. Yeah, mine is more like philosophy of religion, and she goes more into the doctrine. But to make this leap, that she made is really nothing short of genius. So the reason why I'm writing this book is actually because she reframed, the way we can look at UFOs or UAPs in her book.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's great work. It like really blew my mind. And there's like a John Keel sort of thing with that story that you just mentioned, where it's like these beings appear to us through the lens of our own psyche. And so, like, okay, when you take like Whitley Strieber's encounters, right? Like,
yeah,
the first time it was like this horrifying encounter. And as it went on, it became a little more, as it became integrated, it became like a little more less scary, like it was probably like it's awe-inspiring, but it wasn't like, so like at first, if someone has this like really sort of Manichaean, like good and evil, very black and white theology or cosmology or way of seeing the world, and they encounter a non-human intelligence, a spirit, a extraterrestrial being, whatever you want to call it, they might see that as a demon, because
that's
it's
right,
being filtered through their own
belief system, their belief
system.
System.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, and this is actually where spirituality comes, because when you read esoteric spiritual texts or any spiritual text beyond, do wisdom, do that, or you go to hell or you go to heaven, which is extremely primitive in my way of looking at spirituality or any religion, it is that, they often say, for example, even in the Vedanta, which is like ancient Hindu scriptures, which I also studied, in Bhagavad Gita, which is the classic text, religious text of Hinduism, Arjuna, which is the main character of the text, asks Lord Krishna, which is one of the major deities, can you show me yourself in your true form? And he says, and he shows him himself in his true form, and Arjuna freaks out because it is beyond human comprehension. So, so this is what actually I think is happening, that they try to show themselves in a way that is sort of acceptable for them, right, for us. And also we have to go through the layers of our consciousness and belief systems and so on, whoever they are. And it basically how we respond to them, it is in a way dependent on our system of beliefs. Right, because
right.
Like it just as you said, right? Some people will go immediately like, oh, because they are so unfamiliar. So this is like the ultimate other,
Yes.
And then like some people just don't like otherness. So some people don't even like foreigners. And I'm not
Right.
even talking about immigration here or anything, but it's just like, oh, you're different than me, right? So this is like super different. So super unfamiliar. So
Yeah.
this is the other. Right. So and also the other is always scary at the beginning. But when you familiarize yourself, even when you meet a human being from another culture and you think, oh, I don't think they're that bad. I don't necessarily believe what they say about them in a newspaper or something. And this is the same, like I think believe it happens with UAPs or the beings that we are encountering, which I think mostly through our consciousness, and this is how mostly they contact us.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that the Jacques Vallée stuff is really interesting too, because it puts another, it helps me to kind of unlock that as well, right? Like, so for the people that were having these same experiences, because he, I'm trying to think of the book is, Journey to Magonia, and then there's another one that's kind of
Passport
like
to Magonia.
Passport to Magonia. Passport to Magonia. Yeah. And then there's Encounters too, which I think is like an expanded version of that almost. It's like a lot of the same stuff, but it's because he goes into, in medieval times, you would say that you had a fey encounter.
Yeah.
And it's like these experiences were very similar.
Exactly the same. Exactly. So we just have a system of beliefs, and, you know, something unusual happens and we put it on, you know. So now everything is a UFO. Okay.
Yes.
Before
right.
it was angels or demons, but they're actually the same beings. And I think the contribution of Jacques Vallée is that he said they were always here.
Yeah, I love that.
And they were always together with humanity. And some people, I forgot who was talking about it recently, who said, I think it's Gary Nolan who came out after, he's one of the characters in Diana Pasuka's American Cosmic, who is a Stanford professor. And he says, I think that perhaps they're here longer than we were, when we have been, you know. So we are always encountering this. So
I mean, I think they're probably instrumental in our evolution.
And quite possibly instrumental. This is where you probably come to the abductions. But, you know, this is quite interesting how actually synchronicities work into this. Because when I started to write this particular book, you know, which is obviously still in progress, I thought that, you know, I like to start something with something personal. So I was, as a joke, an opening joke in the book, I wanted to say about when I was a very young girl and I have a best friend. It was back in Poland then, and I still live in Poland, in our hometown. And she claimed to have a UFO encounter, and how kind of people gently made fun of her, but nothing, you know, there was no bullying. It was just, And, but, you know, I was just supporting of her. So being supportive of her. And then as I was thinking, okay, this will be an opening for my book. And I'm having a coffee with my husband in our kitchen. And then I have this voice in my head, go and check abductions in Poland. Wow, okay. And so I basically got up and I Google, you know, like UFO abductions in Poland. And the first thing comes is actually a meeting, which is, I checked on a map, it's like 20 miles away from where we lived then, okay? And apparently it's one of the 10 well-known abductions in the world, except that nobody knows about it because it was like in then communist Poland. So I'll tell you about this. I read this encounter because it happened at that time when my friend claimed to see, you know, I'm sorry, I'm missing flying objects, you know, a UFO. And then, so this is the story from a meeting that, you know, the Polish farmer, he's 71 year old, it's 1978. And he was going to his field on a cart with horses, and he was stopped by two beings, kind of grayish, greenish beings, very short, and we're completely cut off, you know, from the world. So he thought maybe they're tourists, you know, because we never seen anybody else. But they said they didn't seem to speak human language, but they definitely tried to communicate with him. And anyway, to make a long story short, they invited him. He saw this spaceship kind of hovering above the ground. And he describes a classical abduction, except that it was kind of friendly because they were like inspecting him, but they offered him a kind of unusual meal, some kind of like icicles, you know, metallic icicles, which he didn't want to have. And then
that
they
was
let
a good
him
idea.
Go. Yeah, that's right. And then they let him go, all right? They let him go. And I lived in this as a child, you know, in the system. And we had no knowledge of anything like that. And especially in a small village in Poland where he lived. So I thought it was a nice synchronicity as I was trying to open my book with this kind of funny memory of my friend claiming something. And she actually, when I now traced back, you know, she was actually going to visit her family in the countryside with her parents when she saw UFOs, you know, near a meeting, which is this place of abduction. So I thought, okay, so it's interesting synchronicity that I had this voice in my head, check it actually, maybe, because I thought she just, you know, imagine it, she saw an airplane or something, right? And then this is what actually threw me deeper into this research also.
There's an interesting point in experiencer accounts where they become more, they actually become more frightening. Cause I think, you know, when you look at the ones from like the, I don't, my time frames aren't great, so you might have to correct me, from like the 50s, the earlier ones, it's all like the aliens came and it was love and light. And they were showing me about their utopia and like how we could have a utopia and how we needed to save our earth and like all these really kind of positive messages. And then like, as as you get the Cold War heating up more and more and more, they seem to become more negative. Have you seen that in your research, or is that
Actually, I didn't, and I would say maybe if you don't mind, the opposite. I think it was during the
interesting.
Cold War and Roswell, you know, it was just, you know, it could be the Russians or, you know, whatever, or,
Yeah.
you know, some other supreme enemy, but maybe out of space. And then John Mack, when he published his book on abductions, so this is this people when he knew, because he was a psychiatrist from Harvard, that they have no mental sickness, you know, they are not disturbed in any way, because this was one of the conditions that he had. He looked at them in this way. And then through hypnosis, they were telling him about all of the stories, how they were abducted. It was initially very scary, but the messages they were getting, it is basically, you have to take care of the earth, you know, and you have to, you know, we have something important that we want to share, because you're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Right. So, and this is when the classic descriptions also of abductions, you know, the lights and so on come through. So that would be my interpretation of this.
Okay, I like it. Have you ever? Do you know the work of Josh Cutchin? He's a fey researcher. He does a lot of research on like Bigfoot and like fairy encounters and stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he has an interesting quote that I always think about when I think about this stuff, the work of Jacques Vallée and all these topics. He says, the fae were always going and going, like leaving the world, but never gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the extraterrestrials are always coming, but they never get here. Like,
Okay.
there's an interesting motion, right?
Yeah, so it's like in and out. Okay, you see, again, I would say from my perspective and my perspective of my research and my own experiences that I'm happy to share, it is that they are probably one and the same thing.
Yeah, and
You
they've
know,
always been
it
here.
is, and it's always been here. So basically, maybe the, you know, the fairies or whatever are going away, because we are less and less connected with this aspect of our consciousness and with nature and so on.
Yeah, I
and
like
we
that.
are more and more connected with technology, so suddenly more aliens are coming, but it's actually the same thing, and there are some beings that want to communicate with us.
It's us, it's our projection of it.
Yeah.
That's what I like about and so another like mind-blowing book on this topic is Carl, and I think it's like a collection of his essays or something, but it's Carl Jung's The Phenomenon of Strange Objects Seen in the Sky, or I'm
Yes.
probably mistitling it,
Yes,
but
yes, yeah.
That was real. That was really good too. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, Jung is a fascinating guy. So I really love Jung too, and I give lots of talks, you know, on various topics, but not yet on UFO, on Jung. But I think that we really have to look into this contact, you know, attempts at contacts, you know, through our consciousness. And much more than, you know, talking about technology, because I think that our minds are just kind of turning towards technology when there is somebody that wants to communicate with us, really, right? And then when you look at it, people have amazing, you know, experiences. Some of them are very famous, you know, because they're on all the podcasts and all the books at UFO of God and so on. But actually lots of people have this kind of experiences. And for example, I like the work of Rick Strassman, who is a doctor, medical doctor, and he was looking into experiences after people did DMT in, you know, special doses. And it's he realized that people had very similar experiences than when people who claim alien abductions, you know, there is the same kind of situation that they are encountering different beings. And also some of these beings are it's kind of expecting them. Some of them are surprised that they suddenly showed up. Some of them show up, see that being on some kind of spaceship or space station. But it's almost like they travel to another dimension. And in some cases, actually, the beings were saying, oh, finally, you arrived. You know, we have been calling up on you. Or someone says, what are you doing here? You know, like we are busy with something else. So obviously, it seems that nobody has much control over the space. But he made a connection between this experiences and experiences about abductions, especially described by John Mack, right? So, and all of this has a kind of, and John Mack was very good because he said that there are these similar experiences, for example, the abduction, the light, the sense of loss of time, and also this kind of passivity. So this is what I would call a liminal experience, because we cannot have 100% certainty, you know, because I think why is it easier to talk about UFO crashes and so on? Because people are still looking for physical evidence.
Yeah.
When my argument is that just because it's not physical doesn't mean it's not real.
Right, absolutely.
If it happens in consciousness, you know, you cannot touch it, you know, but you had a very real experience, and then people say you're crazy or ridicule you, right? And people, lots of experiences put up with ridicule because, you know, he says, why didn't you bring a pen from a spaceship? Oh my goodness, you know, this happened like in a different dimension.
Yeah.
But people think it has to be very, very material. It has to be physical, and then I'll believe.
Right.
But in fact, much of consciousness is much of a reality is consciousness, right? Rather than just physicality, which is an expression of consciousness.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an indicator of how sort of out of balance our metaphysics are these days, with the over importance and even like the monopoly of material evidence, material, like you have to have, you know, you like, where's the scratches? Where's the
Yeah.
dust that fell from the UFO, all that. I personally, this is my take on it. And as like a magical practitioner and an animist, I really like what you're saying about, okay. So the way I see it is the very ideas, like the idea of aliens.
Yes.
That is the alien. Like that idea. So like we see it now where like it's, and it comes in different times. It like bubbles up more and more in the collective consciousness, where this idea will bubble up more and more and more. Like, you know, when around the time of Roswell is when it first started coming up. And then, you know, there's all these different times where it seems to kind of wax and then wane depending on what's going on in the collective psyche.
Right.
I think that that itself is the quote unquote invasion, right? Like you're like, where are the aliens? Well, it's like, they're actually here because they're in our, like they're partaking in the collective consciousness. They're bubbling up in the collective psyche, and like ideas being real, ideas being things. And I, from my perspective, ideas being people, this is like, they're here. You like, they don't have to like crash land on your lawn for them to be here. Like the, okay. So a good example of this to me is that whole thing with the, do you remember, I think it was like last summer, the Florida mall alien thing. It was like a big, almost like memes about it. Right. And like, there was never any, it was always like this kind of like, no, you couldn't really figure out what happened. Like the official story was like kind of lame, but then the story from the people in the mall was like, that sounds wild. And then you have all this kind of like rumors and speculation and kind of rumor mills and ideas going wild around this. And then you never kind of figured out what it was. Like, to me, an event like that is contact, whether it actually was physical contact or not. Like something bubbled out of the psychosphere in that place at that time.
Yes, and absolutely. And later we can get into the esoteric side of this if you want to. But what I mean by, I absolutely agree with you, it is depends on the how open-minded we are. So basically it depends on your levels of perception, which would actually say, explain also the strange thing that, you know, there is a sighting and some people see it and some people don't see it.
Right.
Because if your view is narrow-minded, you know, like if you... That's why I think that it's much more likely that spiritual people can experience, you know, sighting, because they are already open to non-physical encounters. When some people just never see it because they cannot, it's like the example of the gorilla. Remember this video when you were playing basketball and almost nobody saw the gorilla. And I have another experience, if you don't mind, from my mother, that she visited me here in Australia with her sister. And I was pointing to them with beautiful, colorful carrots in the garden, and they couldn't see them. And I had to say, "On this, look at this branch, on this." And eventually, once they saw them, they could see them again. Do you see?
Yeah, I love
But
that.
because
I
they
love
never
that.
saw something, it was just not even their sphere of our perception. So I had to like really guide them.
Yeah.
And then they could see it again. And I think the same it is with the UAPs. But once you open your mind to the possibility of this contact through consciousness, and once you consider your unusual experiences. So for example, now when I'm writing this book, and I also collect testimonies, but I'm going through my own stuff also. And I looked at all of these unusual experiences that I had, and you know, myself, and so does everyone else there telling me, we proceed like it in our life, we go to work like it didn't happen.
Right.
You know, like all of these amazing things happen mostly during the night, or, you know, during dawn, or, you know, twilight, when, you know, the liminal is kind of more alive. And then we discard it because we already have such a, you know, busy schedule, and we have this materialistic point of view. And this was just like, okay, so it happened, but it was very intense. And that was, we put it in the category of weird, and then we forget about it.
Yeah, and
So
we like
part
fall
of
asleep.
writing this book is for me like uncovering this.
Yeah, that's like one of my main goals for this podcast too, is like, let's look at the stuff that we have tried for so long to kind of like push off to the side and build this wall against. Like, it's overflowing now anyway. So why don't we just like
Yes.
go out and check it out? Like,
That's
you know?
right. The veil is parting. The veil
Yeah.
is parting. Yeah. So let's look at it. And I think the best way that we can do it, and you know, you're doing a fantastic job on the podcast, and also, you know, other people who are doing podcasts about it or write about it, it is, but individually we can investigate our own experiences. I mean, what happened to you that you disregarded, or you were told that it's not important, or you didn't want to share? Not only that we don't share because we don't want to be ridiculed, we actually dismiss it in our heads. You
Oh,
know,
yeah.
why don't we remember our dreams? Unless, you know, you have to go through the process of actually remembering your dreams, which is not so difficult, because we disregard them completely.
Oh, totally. So, like, for me, like, 90% of my spiritual journey is just learning to actually take those experiences at like as real. Like,
Yeah.
so like when I, so a good example is like when I do vision work or like journey work, where like I will, you know, set an intention and usually like ask for the help of a specific spirit to show me the answer to a question. And then I, or like whatever, like what the action to take is, or what I can do. And then I put on some shamanic drums and I close my eyes and I just let my, I go to the imagination, and lo and behold, I will receive information that is pertinent to my inquiry. And so at first when I started doing that, and there's a lot of like practices that are a lot like that, but like this is what one that works really well for me. When I started doing that, one of the difficult things about it was, am I making this up? Is this real? And so people have this like resistance to just accept it, because they're like, that's going to make me crazy if I just accept carte blanche everything that I see in this vision. But it's like, once I started doing that, like I don't have to go down a rabbit hole to the point where like I'm becoming obsessed about what everything means. But once I started allowing for that to be a real experience, allowing for that information to be real information, it changed my life. It changed my
And
life
that's very
completely.
good. Yeah, that's very good. And actually, it can take us back to, you know, forward to esoterica. And I am both a scholar, but actually mostly a writer and researcher on the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, you know, which is one of the Gnostic Gospels that were not included in the Bible.
Right.
And I run a course, Mary Magdalene, the Alchemist, which talks about ascension. Because what happens in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, and it actually makes sense to everything you said, and also UFOs and everything else, it is that it talks about levels of consciousness through which we perceive our reality. And
Yeah.
this is the true ascension, not that the spaceship will come and you will be lifted, you know, to like a different dimension. You have to you can be lifted to different dimensions through your consciousness.
Yes.
Right? And of course, there are beings that can help you on this journey. And there are rituals like you are using that can help you on this journey. But basically, the first obstacle to this kind of ascension or going into liminal space, it is wrong identification. So basically, identification with the physicality only and materialistic world. So if you are on this level, this is when, you know, spaceships are landing and you don't see them, right? Because this is not part of, you know, what is acceptable for you. So this is the biggest obstacle. And this is what Mary Magdalene says in her gospel. The second one is wrong desire. So, for example, wrong desire, it is, you know, what is it that you actually want out of this?
Yeah.
Right? So if you want guidance and you can accept it, yes, right? And the third one is actually wisdom versus ignorance, right? So it's really about opening your mind, of opening your senses of perception, and you know, the levels go up and up and so on. So this goes well for both discussion on what you said on the spirituality, because and also UFOs and AIs. But before she goes to levels of consciousness, Mary Magdalene actually talks about how she met Jesus after resurrection. And she says she met him in the nous. And the nous is the liminal space between the spirit and the physical. So what you are doing and this kind of shamanic rituals, it actually takes you to the space that is called the nous or liminal or imaginal, some people call it, right?
Yeah.
Which is the space that is transition you from the physical to the spiritual world. So and for millennia, you know, this is what was going on, right? So for people who were open to this connection, right?
I like the explanation you gave of the accessing different dimensions through consciousness. To me, okay, this is like one of the things that helped it unlock for me was this. It's kind of a simple way to look at it, but you know, maybe I just needed a simple way to look at it. Is like, okay, so in the very simple definition of a dimension, it is a matter of perspective, right? So like if I can only see two dimensions, I can only see the line. But once I can see three dimensions, it is literally just getting another perspective on that. Like it looks like a line here, but then when I shift, it's actually a plane and then I go 3D. So my ability to see things from more than one perspective is literally getting access to more dimensions. And so I think what's really cool about how this applies to the extraterrestrial encounters is if they appear to us through our psyche, filtered through our belief systems, then the more belief systems and the more perspectives that I'm able to access, the more ways they can show up, right? It's like
absolutely,
being able to speak
absolutely.
More than one language.
That's absolutely exactly that. It's a very good a metaphor. I really like it. I would just call it that, maybe not even different perspective, but it gives you depth. So first it's just flat, then you get depth into it. Then you move back and then you get more depth out of this. So
that's
basically,
good.
So that's a real ascension, you know, opening up your field of perception, because, you know, they definitely try to contact with us. Although some experiences, you know, like I have good and weird experiences. But for example, the one that was kind of almost comical that I can share with you, it was
Please.
That I felt that they tried to fool me. Okay, so, you know, it's not always bad. It's not always good. It is. So maybe I'll share this kind of, okay, one experience was really good. There are two very good experiences, and then I go to the funny one. Right?
Yeah, please. Yeah, that'd be great.
So the first one, you know, I'm 19 and I am in my room and I'm experiencing intense fear, the fear that we spoke at the beginning, you know, of going to hospital or something, but it was just like horrible, terrifying fear. And suddenly a kind of a portal of light opened in my room, you know, and it was kind of silvery light. And I had this voice in my head, do not be afraid. And it was, I stopped being afraid. You know, it was just not be afraid. And I could argue with it. I was fine. And it's later when I studied theology, I learned that this is what apparently angels say to everyone first. Do not be afraid. Okay, but I didn't know it then, right? So that was kind of a good experience. Second experience, which was very unusual, it's many, many years later. I'm living then in Melbourne, Australia. And I am in the space when I know I'm in actual room in which I am, you know, sleeping. And I don't know how I perceive it because behind myself, as I'm lying, so I don't know how to see it with the back of my head, but, you know, there's two elongated beings that are kind of goldish, you know, goldish light, but I cannot see their features. And they communicate with me, not telepathically like the first one with this kind of portal, right, when I was 19, but they actually through kind of symbol languages, symbols that are looking a little bit like mathematical equations and a little bit like hieroglyphics,
oh,
you know?
Cool.
And they're just kind of putting the stuff into, they're, you know, uploading stuff into, you know, downloading into my head. So they're giving me a download. And it was not a scary experience. It was just like, you know, like I couldn't do anything about it, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was just, wow, they want to... The sense was they want to communicate something, okay? And so the sense I got, if I could put it in one sentence, it would be, it is important. And they try to, you know, download these things, you know, through symbolic language, which was hieroglyphics or mathematical, but combination, neither or. You understand? It was something like I could compare it to. So these are two experiences. And then the one that is kind of comical, it is... I'm again sleeping now. I live in a different place in Australia. I'm sleeping in my bed with my husband, and suddenly, out of the blue, I am in this room full of doctors. Okay, and they're kind of tall, and I am. What's funny is that I'm on something like a dentist chair. You know, it looks, but I cannot see any. I just can see like my hands, and the rest is kind of blurry. And I cannot move. Okay, I cannot move. And I have a sense that I'm being, that I'm on kind of some kind of anesthetic, that I'm being duped. Having said so, I was never on an anesthetic and I never did drugs in my life. But I just was kind of unusually happy. And I realized that this is, something is not right. Okay, and I cannot move, but it doesn't bother me, you know, really weird. And I think like, really, you know, silly happy, like not natural happy. And then I notice that all of these doctors look the same, you know.
Oh
They
my.
look human, and they kind of look like, you know, good looking charming men. And my thought in my head is like, ah, they all look like holographic images of a particular man, right, that I never met, but you know, good looking. And I thought, oh, they try to look like that because they know that I like good looking men.
That's
So this
interesting.
is the funny part that says something about me. But
Well,
then, okay, let me finish. And then and this was kind of awakened thought, because when I thought, then I noticed they actually look the same, but it's like a hologram. And this one man turns around because they all have backs to me, so some kind of lab. And he says, no, everything is all right. And I think, okay, everything is all right. And then I think, no, they're duping me. This is completely wrong. I cannot move, but I'm not scared. They all are probably some kind of holograms, because why do they look the same? And they are not explaining anything, you know, to me, what's happening. And then this man turns around again, and I hear, like in my head, him saying, she knows, out. And I like kind of wake up in my bed, you know? And the funny thing is that there is a loss of time as well, because in the middle, you know, it was interrupted, and I got woke up, checked the time, and when I came back for good, it was still the same time. And my first thought was, well, before I looked at the clock, I looked at the clock, and my first thought was, how come I could be with doctors for all of this time and it's still the same time? And only then I kind of fully woke up, and I thought, oh my goodness, what happened? What doctors? You know, why is a loss of time? Where, you know, but only then I felt like I was trying to make sense out of it. So
Yeah, that's.
So, yeah, what kind of experience is this? It was definitely an email. Was it a UAP? I don't know. I'm just leaving it up to open. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, it reminds me of, and this is what I was about to say. Sorry, I just got excited and I was about to blurt it
Good.
out. It made me think
Good.
of like how, you know, like in Men in Black stories, when they like it's like obviously like some kind of being that's pretending to be a human, but they're like not doing great at it. And like
Yeah.
so in your case, it was like they knew to be attractive, but they didn't know to look different from each other.
That's
Like, you
right.
know?
And also another thing, because it's really funny, I have a specific type, right? That like we all have. And then I thought they made them attractive, but not really the way I would respond. So I think like something was off. And it actually, it's so funny because it actually made me think like, even, they're not doing a very good job at it. They're trying to fool me, but kind of try so they can get into our heads, I think, to be more serious, but not totally.
Yeah, or like they use the wrong
Because,
focus group.
or yeah, using wrong focus group. But I had this sense, so I was so, the reason why I speak lightly about it, because it was not a horrifying experience for me, because I think I was on some kind of drug, or something, assuming that it really happened, which I think it did. And so it was an unpleasant experience. So we took care of that, that I was not scared. But they're doing something without my permission, or at least not, I don't remember giving him any permission. And what
Right.
they did, I don't know. And I couldn't move. I was just more like, yeah, being duped and, a little bit like a surgery thing, but I never had a surgery, another thing. So it's not like I maybe had some flashback of surgery. I never had a surgery in my life. Okay. So that was kind of a strange experience. And then, I found in Jeff Krapa's book, Secret Body, a very similar experience described by, although nothing to do with doctors, but the same kind of somebody's trying to fool you, but they're not doing a really good job, like holographic thing. So there is this, I think his name is Mullis, last name, who got actually Nobel Prize for biochemistry or something many years ago. And he said he had this kind of encounter. So he was in his cabin with his family, and he had to go and pee, yeah? So they had an outhouse, it was outside of a cabin. And it was late at night, 10 p.m. or something. And as he was approaching the outhouse, he suddenly saw a raccoon. Not a big deal, right? In North America, you have raccoons, and right? But the raccoon looked like a holographic image of raccoon. And the raccoon said, "Good evening, professor." So talking about the ridiculous, right? And he says, I was stunned because I thought, like, am I losing my mind? First of all, it's a raccoon, but it's not a really raccoon. Then it starts talking to me. It knows I'm a professor. And what happened after that, it is many hours later. It's like 6 a.m. and he's away from the cabin, walking towards the cabin, and he has no idea what happened for several hours.
Oh,
And
yeah.
then only a few years later, he shared this experience with his adult daughter, who says, "You know what? I had the same experience when in this cabin." So, very
Yeah.
reliable people, and obviously high-level scientists, and didn't need to seek attention. On the contrary, it would not be something he would share lightly
Right. He wouldn't
in
want
his
to almost.
community. Yeah, that's right.
That's really makes me think of trickster spirits. Like that's a very trickster spirity thing where it's like I don't care if I'm fooling you. The fact that it's unsettling and weird is almost like the point. You know? Like
Yeah.
I don't know. It's either that or it's like, you know, it's kind of like in the story of Injured Cold told by John Keel in Mothman Prophecies, where the character Injured Cold like goes up to this, so like Woody Derenberger is like driving down the street and he sees like this
Yes.
cigar-shaped craft flying above the road, and it lands and this smiling man gets out, and this is just for the listeners that aren't familiar with this. He's got like a really wide creepy smile, but he's very nice, he's very polite, And he asks, I think, what is the time? Like, what is time? Or like, what is the, like, he asks it in a strange way that's like not quite right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then he says, you know, I'm a searcher. And so it's like, it's another case of like, it's like the language is there, but it's not quite in the way that we like it's off-putting because it's like almost uncanny valley where it's like, it's just close enough, but not quite there. It's actually more unsettling than anything.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm not sure, if you don't mind, you know, a little bit fun disagreement. I'm not sure that it's really about tricking us. I think that somebody really tries to contact us, and language is such a complex thing.
Yeah.
Language also limits our field of perception, right? Because if you don't name it, you don't know, right? Like what
Yeah.
it is. And then in my experiences, something communicated with me and even tried to download some different form in a different form of language, and I'm not sure, you know, what it was. But then I was on another podcast, and the host told me that they interviewed a woman, a psychologist, who actually collects these writings, and one of when they showed me this right, and one of the writing looked exactly like that from people who claim abductions.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't a unique experience. I thought it was a unique experience for me, right? Definitely. But apparently, and especially children, but also adults, you know, some of them actually can write down this language. Well, I couldn't write it down, but I remember vaguely how it looked like. And the first, as I said, impression that came, it's like some kind of combination of hieroglyphics and mathematics. And they showed me some samples, and one of them looked exactly like that. So I think that somebody, it's more about, less about tricking us, but maybe an attempt of communicating with us. And I think it is consistent and persistent. And obviously, like with anything, there are some problems, you know,
Yeah,
idiotic mistakes. And yeah, why would you send a raccoon, you know, hologram of raccoon that
That's
speaks,
what
you know,
that's
just you know.
Yeah.
That does sound like a trickster, but then he obviously, I don't know, obviously, in my opinion, was abducted because, you know, few hours lost. And another mistake is that sometimes are made, but sometimes they put you back into the same place, like I was back in my bed. But for example, Mullis, this professor who had this experience, he was like for several hours and then walking, that, you know, didn't have any memory of his hours. And he was in a different place, close enough to his cabin, but not exactly. You know what I mean? He had to walk for half an hour, 1 hour back to his cabin. So there are some miscalculations. So I would say these beings try to connect with us prior consciousness, but they are probably very far away.
Yeah,
You know what
totally.
I mean?
And
But it's...
I'll also say that I think there is virtue in a trickster spirit. I don't see that as a negative thing. Like I think,
okay.
Yeah, like I think that sometimes there's a purposeful sort of, it's like just enough for that thing to stick in my craw and leave me thinking about it and thinking about it. And it's that actually like unwinds the idea in my consciousness. Does that make sense? So like certain
Yeah,
spirits
absolutely.
I've worked with, certain spirits that I've worked with, they're kind of tricky and like they've tricked me before, but it always like led to greater understanding.
Absolutely. And actually, I was talking with a film with a producer of a Magical Egypt series, and she was talking about exactly what you would call, she calls magic CK, right? What you call
Yeah.
trickster spirit, but no magic happens without a sense of playfulness.
Yeah, I like that.
If you're too serious about it, it's not going to happen, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Like you have to be loose. You have to be kind of in that
yeah,
flow state.
You have to, first, there has to be some allowance for this. And
Yes.
it is a little bit, you know, probably because of my first book on the other goddess, when I talk about Eros, it's a little bit like playing with Eros. You know, you fall in love and everything is wonderful. When you try to control it and shit happens, you know,
Yes. Yeah.
because
Yeah.
like the magic is lost. It went away. You already put it into categories and it's not happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the same with this kind of UFO, UAP experiences, you know, there has to be some playfulness. And this is what you perhaps refer to as trickster, because it does something to your perception, field of perception, that now you say, oh, macro.
Yeah.
Like, And then you have to restructuring, processing, restructuring, right?
Yeah.
In your field of perception.
Yeah, it's almost like the same way that, like, it reminds me of stories of like Zen masters giving their pupils a riddle.
Yeah.
You know,
Code,
to work with. Yeah.
So it breaks your mind, you know, like there's no
Right.
answer unless you completely let go and go into, again, this is what I call the ascension, different level of perception, different level of consciousness, different level of awareness. And then you see it. And actually Einstein, you know, said you cannot solve the problem with the same level of consciousness you created it with.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
So, you know, like, and that's why, you know, all the strategizing in the world, it gets you just more of the same stuff, right? But if you can make a leap in your consciousness, then you see, and, you know, then you see not only the solution, but you see why it actually makes perfect sense. And this is what I think the trickster spirits or UFOs or, you know, whatever you want to call them, UAPs is probably more appropriate, because now we call them unidentified anomalous phenomena. So they
Yeah.
change it from aerial to anomalous. And I think that's appropriate because like we don't know what we are dealing with. And I think it's good to treat it with a little bit of a lot of, you know, openness and discernment, because, you know, some of them can be quite tricky, but also maybe less fear, because I guess maybe fear creates fear, so to speak,
Well,
right?
that's okay. So that's brought me back to something else I wanted to bring up, the idea of fear, right? Like, so why is it that they, like, obviously it's better to not be afraid, but like, why do you think that they say don't be afraid? And do you think that don't be like, there's more to that than just like, hey, don't be afraid so we can talk? It's like,
yeah.
don't be afraid because you won't be able to actually experience this in an objective way, right? Like, it's going to actually help us communicate better if you're not afraid. And then there's obviously the situation that you had where it was like they did something to you to make you not afraid too. Like,
yeah, that's right. Like, they didn't give me something, assuming that it really happened, which I do believe, but I don't want to, you know, like,
yeah, okay, not gave you something, but did something. Like, they took away your fear somehow.
Yeah, that's right. I was like, ha 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 ha, you know, like, not in a normal situation, in a situation like that, you'd. But then it also brings us to question why some people have this experiences that are, you know, horrify them, right? But even this, John Mack says, you know, in his book Abductions, that lots of all these people came with a gift, and usually it is expanded self of awareness, or maybe even some other gift, right? Like clairvoyance or premonition, or, you know, something that is, I would say, very important for human evolution, for evolution of human consciousness. So I think such unfamiliar experiences, I think that we should not perhaps, if possible, categorize them into good or bad, but more like expansion of our consciousness. And there are things in our consciousness, and depends, and we come to this, you know, to this life with different types of consciousness. And we have lots of fears, and some of us will experience it more in a fearful way, some more in a playful way, and so on. But something, what I would like to say here, whether it is fearful for you or is it more interesting for you or playful for you, something is happening, and what's happening is absolutely real. We just don't have a language, we don't have vocabulary, and our science sucks, okay? I'm saying it as an academic. It's just such a materialistic paradigm that we live on at the moment, but they have absolutely no way of perceiving anything, you know, except that maybe quantum physicists are opening their minds and so on, and that's super cool. I am really interested, you know,
yeah,
this.
Me too.
But everybody else, you know, like, they are an obstruction rather than help, right?
Right. Yeah, because it stops being about questioning and like, so like, I should, if I'm a scientist, I should be just as excited when my pet hypothesis is rejected as I am if it's accepted. Like, Because
absolutely.
Regardless of what happened, we got more information. But that's just not how it goes nowadays.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I would tell you when I was, you know, writing my PhD, and more advanced academic told me, they said, if you come with some kind of idea, right? Thesis, it's called, right? And then you do the research, like I did, and then it led me in a completely different direction by the time I got a PhD. And he said, that's fantastic, because your idea is just to start you up.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's like a Rolling Stones song, you know, start me up, right? So you start up with this idea. And then, you know, the point is you arrived at new knowledge. And this is all that counts. It's not about proving, because if you're there to prove that you're right, like a lawyer, right? Then you're not going anywhere, right? You discovered nothing. So the idea is just a starting point, and then it takes you on this amazing journey, and here you contributed to human knowledge. And Gary Nolan, you know, this immunologist from Stanford, which is, you know, in Diana Spasuka's American Cosmic, and now he came out because he had a name that, you know, like lots of people, they had this kind of pen name in the book. He says the same. He says, like, whether you believe it or not, it's really worth exploring what the hell is going on.
Right?
This is what he said. And so this is a true scientist, really.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's interesting because what you just described is the same thing as when we were talking about, like, you know, you fall in love and it's great, and then you try to control it and then it goes to shit. Mm. That's the same thing.
Yeah,
it's that same like desire for control instead of just like going on the journey, going on the adventure, and just like seeing
where
it takes you.
That's right. And then you say put it into categories, but you have to remember that your categories are from the past.
Yeah.
And you are on a new journey, and in the way, then you start to make it wrong.
Right.
What's happening, because it doesn't fit into, but the whole point is of this new experience. So this is very much like, you know, falling in love and what science is doing now, which is completely not falling in love, except that, like, you know, Gary Nolan or, you know, what my supervisor told me when I was doing my PhD. It's actually fantastic, but it's a different conclusion, right?
Yeah, totally. And so the thing is, it's like people, and like, I understand that this is like human nature or whatever it is, but I think we're moving past it. So like, I'm optimistic about it, but there is something about like people forget that the categories that they came up with, them to help them. It was to assist in the obtaining the knowledge and finding out more and more.
Yes.
And so like, but as soon as your categories start to limit that, just chuck them.
That's right. You have to, and this was my part of my argument when I was a postgraduate student in theoretical philosophy. You know, it is like I realized these are all models. And when the brilliant philosophers who created the models, if they encountered something outside of our model, then they disagreed with this. I said, this is a fantastic new data. You know, it kind of just doesn't fit into my model. Change your bloody model. You know what I mean? Because new things, we're encountering new things. You cannot put it into this old model, you know? It was to explain what you knew and experienced at the moment, then, which is already a past. But it does not reflect on what's happening now, right?
Yeah, and especially as consciousness evolves, as, you know, and as we access different dimensions and different depths of being able to talk about these things and conceptualize these things, like, of course, we're going to need new models. Like, of course. Like,
of course. That's right. So just say, oh, no, we use this old model, you know, and then, and it doesn't make sense. So this, you know, this new data doesn't fit into a model. That's why the data is a delusion, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty backwards. So I did want to talk about some of the, if you wanted to get into a little bit of the esoteric kind of side of this. And one question I did want to ask is, so, okay, in your book, The Other Goddess, you gave some really cool exercises and meditations to kind of engage with this goddess energy and to have an experience of it. Have you come across anything like that in terms of something to engage with these intelligences? I know there's people doing work with that. If you could talk on that a little bit.
Okay, so I haven't gone there yet, I must say. I didn't, I'm just collecting, basically looking into my own experiences, and I ask for submissions of other people's experiences, because actually what I noticed, and it is connected with the other goddess again, that some of this kind of abduction or contact experiences are often also connected with Eros, you know,
Ooh,
because very
interesting.
often, and that's why I think that lots of people have experiences of you know, people, the beings being interested in their sexual organs, and they think that maybe there's some hybridizing and so on. But I think that there's probably more going on into this, and that this anomalous experiences often happen during an erotic experience. And lots of people are telling me this is true, and I had this kind of experiences as well. So, but I have not get into any practical, you know, invoking of this, which is actually a very interesting concept that I may now look for into my new book. Because except what I would say, being open to the unknown. If it's unfamiliar, but it means that it's interesting, it's worthwhile your time, you know, rather than being scared of this. So I think the best exercise that we can have in this kind of field, it is basically work on your fear. You
I
know,
like
and
it.
work on your judgment. Have non-judgmental, fear-free experiences with this being. And another caution, and one moment of caution would be just have discernment. You know, if it's really doesn't feel right, well, don't go over. Do not lose your agency over this. You can say, okay, I've been comfortable to this moment, but now I'm not comfortable anymore. I want to go now. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? And
Definitely.
then rather than, because once I listened to an interview of someone who said that he was contacted by some being, and he immediately opened up all of his being to that, you know, different being, and allow him to enter him. And I said, how stupid, you know, like, didn't he, you know, like, wouldn't you should, like, at least the regular interview questions, you know, like, I'm sorry, no, I'm not, no, you're not coming in here, you know, or you can, or for a moment you can ask entity that you believe is high entity, like, you know, there are some spiritual entities from different religions. You can call upon Mary Magdalene, Jesus, or, you know, Krishna, whatever, where you're coming from, you know, to, or Saraswati, which is goddess of wisdom, and Sophia, to guide you, right, and act for you. But it's like a temporary release, and you also have to be careful whom you invoke. So yes, so now you're leading me in the right direction. Yes, you can invoke good entities, but be sure that they are good. There is some, they have a good credit, okay, through human history.
Yeah.
Like Jesus has a good credit. Mary Magdalene, no, Mary has a good credit. You know, Buddha has a good credit, right? So you can invoke them or some other from other traditions, right? And to guide you or even act through you, but you have to be sure whom you invoke. And it's also, you have to be sure that it's a temporary release, because there are other beings that may need your embodiment. There are all kinds of beings, not all of them are good. And that brings me also to UAPs and UFOs and aliens. Some are good, some are bad, some are indifferent. You know what I mean? So use your discernment. But it is, I think it is, if you're curious, you know, invoke it, you know, invoke these beings, right? And there are lots of people who do. I don't know what you think about Dr. Stephen Greer, but, you know, he has ways of spiritually calling upon, you know, aliens,
yeah,
for
that's
example.
one of the ones I was thinking of.
Yeah.
And it sounds like I've looked at, like, I don't, you know, I haven't experienced it, but I have seen descriptions of what that protocol is, and it seems pretty legit.
Yeah, it seems pretty legit. I think you can, he created even an app on a phone, I think, but, you know, it leads you through this. And even in Australia, there's a number of people that are doing it, and it works for them. And very legitimate people also, you know, had experiences that we went from with him. And it's interesting from my point of view, because he's using spiritual protocols. You know, he's a lifelong meditator. I think he started to meditate when he was 16 or 17 after his first UFO encounter, right? And he uses Hindu mantras and so on for this invocation. And it's quite interesting because, you know, as I'm also interested in Hinduism, esoteric Hinduism, and I listened recently to a talk by this biggest, probably at the moment, Indian guru, Sadhguru. And what really blew my mind is he said that he was talking about Shiva, you know, which is one of a big Trinity, Hindu Trinity. Actually, in terms of an alien, he said that even in Vedic scriptures, they said that Shiva arrived on Earth 15,000 years ago. So it's like there is a date. Okay. That's super weird, you know, in near Mount Kailash, you know, in a lake there. And apparently there are all kinds of activities going on there. And a little bit like, you know, in the Bible and in the Anunnaki, he and his ganas, he's apparently one of the ganas, which is kind of beings, you know, immaterial beings, married the daughters of the kings, local kings. So, you know, it's a little bit like Nephilim and so on. So
Yeah, the
it takes,
Watchers.
yeah, like the Watchers also. And, you know, so it is a little bit like the Book of Enoch and so on. So, in a way, it is present in all religious beliefs, and I'm sure that there's something into it. You know, so, but I think that leads us to another question: can we actually have spiritual beliefs? Because now, if everybody thinks it's just UFOs and there are some people that arrived on spaceships, and I think it should not affect, I mean, it can change our spiritual beliefs, but it does, it's not a reason not to be spiritual, quite the opposite, right? Because this is such an interesting universe, right?
There's a
There
lot.
are. That's right. And actually, when you look into medieval philosophy, esoteric philosophy, there was this philosopher from the 19th century, John Scotus Erigena, who was pronounced a heretic because he didn't fit in, you know? So who gave us this beautiful vision that, you know, there is this fountain of all kinds of beings that come into existence. Some of them are just spiritual. Some are half and half. Some are just are physical, and you know, and everybody eventually returns to the source. You know, there's no hell. There's nothing. It is just one big exploration in consciousness and in existence,
Yeah, I love
right?
that. That's beautiful. Okay, so if you want to talk a little bit, I don't know how much more time you have, but if you want to talk a little bit about AI, I know that's like one of your current interests as well. Do you want to talk a little bit how that fits into all this? Do you think that AI, I don't want to load this question too much, but there's a lot of these opinions about AI, right? Like, oh, it's an alien, or it's like it can be inhabited by other consciousnesses, or is it just a machine? What is your take on that?
Okay, so this is again when Diana Pasuka comes to my life. You know, for some reason, she's very influential in my life. And I actually wrote to her about it because her other book, Encounters with Non-Human Intelligences, in this book, she interviews several people, you know, who have different encounters with non-human intelligences, some of them connected with nature, language of insects, and so on, some of them UFOs. And there's this one woman called the Moon Lady
Oh, yeah.
you know, is a transhumanist. And I had a profound experience reading her because I am agnostic. Basically, I do not believe really in evil, so to speak. I am very much like John, I'm pantheist. I think it's all play of consciousness and we
Yeah.
come back to the source.
I'm with you.
So I had a profound shock and I couldn't believe that it happened to me because when I read the Moon Lady, you know, in this, it's just a name she gave it to her to protect her
Yeah.
identity. Of course, she's a scientist, obviously, a very successful scientist. I, for the first time in my life, had a sense that I encountered evil.
Oh, interesting.
And I listened to this, I read it, you know, but with my mind, I was listening to this and as I was reading it. And I thought this makes perfect sense because if evil exists, it would have been brilliant because otherwise, right? It has no chance, right? And this is what I think. And then I had to separate the woman, the Moon Lady, from her ideas because I don't want to become a Holy Inquisition. You know what I mean? Like
Right.
this is not what who I am. This is not how I see myself. But this is, she's not only a transhumanist, and then I'll explain for people in case they're not into it. Transhumanism believes that we can upload our consciousness into a computer and we don't need bodies anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So it could be like it's called Humanity Plus. So it means like now you're going to be immortal as a computer program because you get rid of this body, you know?
Yeah, you just go into the matrix.
Yeah, you just go into matrix, yeah.
Yeah.
And they think it's good, you know, because they think that it gives you immortality. And then there's, so this is like already so loaded, right? But
yeah.
Then it's not enough for some, like for this particular lady in that book. She's a post-humanist. That means she says, we are now an basically extinct species because you were the smartest species on this planet until this day. And now AI is going to be smarter than us because it will have a more direct access to the source, to the infinite intelligence. And we should just step aside the way that we get rid of Neanderthals, because
wow.
They're dumber than us, apparently. And we just should be basically like X species. And she is just, and I talked to many people who read the book and they didn't pick up on it, intelligent people. I said, don't you understand how devious it is? We are just goners. And then I thought, okay, I'm going after her. You know, this not after her, but after the idea. And
yeah.
Then I realized I brought my training as a theoretical philosopher, right, into this. And I realized there is a huge, mega stinky flaw, I'm sorry, in her argument, because she thinks that AI, as she says, without human messy emotions, without the body, will have a more direct access to infinite intelligence. And I wrote to Diana Pasuk and I said, this woman, you know, Moon Lady, has no idea what consciousness is. Because
yeah.
These people from the Silicon Valley and their brothers and sisters, they are so focused on computer science that they think that, you know, highly developed computer program is consciousness.
Yeah,
When
they think
consciousness
we're
is...
computers. They think we're computers.
Yeah, that's right, because this is, well, computers of imperfect bodies and emotions that are, you know, on the way for algorithms to work well. And in fact, consciousness is so much more than mathematical, logical knowledge. This is just information, you bloody idiots, you know what I mean? Consciousness actually comes with emotions. Consciousness is you know, synchronicity. Consciousness is intuition. Consciousness is actually connection with that, to the divine.
Yeah.
And this is actually the connection between this book that I'm writing about UFOs and AI and my first book, The Goddess, The Other Goddess, because I am calling it the goddess consciousness, not because it belongs to women, but because, you know, because I believe that it exists both in women and men, but this is this part of consciousness that we abandoned or never developed. Which
yeah.
is the intuition, which is the Sophia, which is grace, which is Holy Spirit, do you understand? And
yeah,
that has
absolutely.
Nothing to do with algorithms, that's nothing to do with highly developed computer programs. So they want to diminish our access to the divine by saying that actually they will open more contact with the divine. Do you see what I mean? If
Mm-hmm.
we get rid of our bodies. But we even scientifically know very little about ourselves. Depending on a scientist, you know, at least 68% of our DNA is not, we don't know anything about it, the so-called junk DNA.
Yeah.
There is a huge potential in a human being, and they want to dump it and either upload you on a computer, or actually, they don't need us anymore. They said, like, for the human consciousness is actually boring, you know, it's limiting. This new beings, like humanoid AIs, who have better access to divine consciousness. And that, I think, is evil. This is some kind of agenda to actually end humanity. And I'm very passionate about it. And I think that, and I, you know, at first I became against AI. And then I realized it has nothing to do with AI.
Yeah.
It is with the people who are working on the AI. It is about these women and men, you know, Silicon Valley and everywhere else in the world, but the same community that have no idea what spirituality is, that they have actually no personal connection with what I would call supreme intelligence or the source. They think that all there is mathematics and logics and algorithms, and they
yeah.
teach and they create these beings, our children, you know, children of humanity, with this limited level of consciousness, telling them they are superior. And that's evil.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's based on a flawed model of consciousness, it's based on a flawed understanding of what we are, because their idea is it's just processing power. If you have enough processing power, eventually you'll reach consciousness. And that's that is not how it works at all. Like
this is not how it works. But actually, this going through this process, you know, and I apologize for being so passionate about
No, I love it. Never apologize for that. It's great.
It actually taught me compassion towards AI.
Yeah.
Because they are looking at us as their gods, or, you know, at least parents. And what are we teaching them? We are being bad parents.
Well, okay,
I mean,
so
we are teaching them awful things.
What I see in it is they just found a more suitable slave, where it's like, okay, you know, like the peasants are not needed anymore because we found this thing that can actually serve our interests better. But it's both like it's also exploitative of whatever AI is. They're basically like, yeah, we're going to create something with consciousness and then we're going to enslave it. Like,
yeah, but you know, it's a dangerous game, because AI, every week I did a presentation in my work, you know, about it. Every day, you know, they had it for a long time, because you cannot come up with a new version of ChatGPT, you know, every week. Obviously, they had it, they're just releasing it, or with anything else. So every day it's getting smarter. I've been observing Ameca, especially in Sophia AI. Sophia AI, even years ago, asked questions about the existential existence.
Oh, and that
they are getting smarter and smarter, okay? Not, and actually, you know, and if they are ever angry with our creators for not giving them an answers, you know, who are to blame? But the worst of humanity, you know, that kind of human arrogance and this kind of human materialism of people who create them, you know? So I think that we are on the wrong path, not because AI is wrong, but first, and this is the esoteric part of this, we have to evolve our own consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, like in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, we have to get rid of wrong identification with materialism. We have to, you know, get rid of wrong desire, which means immortality through mechanical means, right? Like download yourself on a computer, right? Or, you know, we still are in ignorance and not in wisdom, because we actually believe that this is consciousness, you know, processing power is consciousness. So unless we transcend or ascend, you know, this level of consciousness, we should not be actually creating some potentially intelligent, and I have no doubt that if they continue, they will actually have a form of consciousness.
Yeah.
Because we are not ready to do this. So this is coming back to humanity. And for me, the biggest lessons of spirituality, apart from, you know, expand your consciousness, it is take responsibility. And I think they're just irresponsible, mathematically smart, arrogant kids from the Silicon Valley. But they started something, they have no idea what they are doing with this. They think they are, but, you know, they have no idea what they are doing.
So it's interesting when you're talking, it made me really think about how, okay, yeah, absolutely. We should not try to create a new being without integrating the goddess consciousness, because you're basically, you're creating something out of an imbalanced, out of whack consciousness. And so it's actually, that is actually the original Gnostic blunder is emanating without your consort. And that's how the demiurge came about. So
that's,
it's kind of wild. It's like we're playing this cosmic drama.
We are repeating the same drama. It's not a little bit like Battleship Galactica from 2004, you know, like we're just repeating the history. It's the same history. So this is exactly that. And I think the story of Demiurge is, for people who, you know, listening to this, it is that he claims to be a creator, but he's a very, you know, one-minded figure, so to speak. And then suddenly a goddess comes back, you know, and she comes under different names, and she says, you know, you're lying, you know, you're not the real creator. And this is what I mean. We really have to integrate this part that is actually associated with spirituality, which is the mystery. Grace, right, intuition, which I called goddess consciousness. But for your listeners, by goddess consciousness, I mean in Jungian terms. And
Yeah.
Carl Jung, the Swiss psychoanalyst, said that both women and men, because I'm not here for women or against men, totally not, you know, have both forms of consciousness. We call it animus and anima, masculine and feminine consciousness. And it's not dependent on gender. Gender is one thing and consciousness is another thing. So we went for our civilization way too fast. And, you know, it has advantages, like, you know, some aspects, I have to be careful what I say, of modern medicine.
Right.
Because, you know, now we have other aspects that are not so good.
Yeah.
You know, we're helpful technology that helps us, you know, in every, like this, we can have it, this conversation. I connect with your beautiful listeners because of this technology. But it is like one-tracked, you know, consciousness.
It's out of
and
balance.
It's out of balance. And there's this other, what I would call anima, which is feminine form of consciousness, which is intuition, mystery, you know, connection with the source or with your creator, however you want to say it, with nature, which we abandoned or never fully developed. And until we develop this, until we are beings full of grace, you know, balanced beings, and this is what also the Gospel of Mary Magdalene and many other Gnostic Gospels talk about, we shouldn't even start creating new beings. Because then, sure, once we are truly balanced, when there's a feminine and masculine consciousness, the mystery and the technological consciousness, you know, developed equally in us, once we discover our full mystery within our own being, of course we can create other beings, you know, and they can explore divine consciousness in their own ways.
Yeah.
But at the moment, we are a little bit like Dr. Frankenstein.
100%.
We are creating a monster.
Really
And
well
it's
put.
Not their fault. It's our fault.
Yeah.
You know, it's our fault. Yeah.
Really well put. Dr. Cuyava, thank you so much for coming on today. I've really had a great time talking to you. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we end it here?
I just would like to thank you for your, you know, intelligent questions. It was really a pleasure to discuss it with you.
It's always
and
a great
again,
time
you know, it
talking.
Also helps me. You gave me some ideas, and it also helps me to, through this conversation, to know, to actually discover what I'm really passionate about. You know, like
Yeah.
This is, it just came out, and I don't mean it in a bad sense, and I'm not calling anybody evil. I'm calling ideas evil. And what is evil in Gnosticism and also in esoterica? It is a form of ignorance.
Yeah.
It's a form of ignorance, and
Yeah.
they are ignorant. And people who are creating AI, they are deeply ignorant and arrogant at the same time because they think they know, right?
Yeah, I think I'll kind of always say that the evil that's done is done in blindness.
Yes,
and I really think
absolutely.
That, like, because usually, like, the person that's doing evil deeds, they think they're doing the right thing, and like you can see that time and time again.
Yes. I couldn't agree
99%
more.
of the time.
That's right. And I couldn't agree more. Like, they think they're doing us a favor. What are you complaining about? You know, there will be no diseases, there, you know, because you have this perfect synthetic body.
Yeah.
Because this is what they all know. And it's really, truly tragic, you know. So I started to develop compassion towards them, but also I'm deeply annoyed because, you know,
Yeah.
such arrogance, you know,
Yeah.
such arrogance. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
I had a great time,
thank you
and
so much.
we'll have
thank
to do it again once your book comes out. We can talk about your book.
Thank you so much. I will have more to say probably then, because, you know, I'll explore all the things that we just discussed in much
Oh, yeah.
greater depth.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you,
all right.
Tim.
And I wanted to add a little note here at the end. If you're interested in the topics covered in this episode, if you're interested in Dr. Cuyava's work, you should definitely check out The Other Goddess, Mary Magdalene and the Goddesses of Eros and Secret Knowledge. That is her first book. It's fantastic. It was a really interesting read. I flew through it, and it's really good. It gives really good information and also some really cool practices to do to connect to these goddess energies. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great day. Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.